known to exaggerate slightly. He was coming to school Monday, and the teacher was asking the students what they had done, and little Johnny said, "Well, I'd like to tell you." And she said, "Yeah, little Johnny, what'd you do this weekend?" He said, "Well, me and my dad went fishing." She said, "Oh, you went fishing. Did you have any luck? How'd you do?" He said, "Oh, we wore them out. We caught all kinds of fish." She said, "Really? How many did you catch?" He said, "Well, we caught 100 fish. She said, "100 fish? That's remarkable. How big were they?" He said, "Oh, they were big." She said, "Well, how much did they weigh?" He said, "Oh, they weighed 100 pounds apiece." His teacher said, "Little Johnny, 100 fish that weighed 100 pounds apiece, that'd be 10,000 pounds. You couldn't even put that on a boat. That's exaggeration, little Johnny. You are making that up." He said, "No, ma'am, I'm not making that up. We caught 100 fish. They were big catfish. They weighed 100 pounds apiece." She said, "Johnny, you are making that up." She said, "What if I just made up a story like I'm on my way to school and this 10-foot tall grizzly bear jumps out of the woods and is about to attack me, and this little 2-pound chihuahua comes from the other side and jumps up and grabs the grizzly bear by its nose and flips it over and chases it off. Would you believe that?" He said, "Yes, ma'am. That's my dog." Well, we're going to see if we can cut through some exaggeration, cut through some things that have maybe been told in the past that might not be exactly accurate today, as we discuss what ironically is the most often asked question to us at Apologetics Press. Now, we deal with all kinds of things at Apologetics Press, and they're very important things. Last night we gathered together and we had a lesson on the existence of God. I would suggest the most important question in the entirety of the human endeavor. Does God exist? And we nailed that one down last night. Very important question. Is the Bible God's Word? Another extremely important question, one that would make a difference in all of our lives, but not the one that's asked to us at Apologetics Press most often. In fact, if I were to ask you, what do you think is the number one asked question to us in all of the stuff we do, all the scope of Christian evidences, what do people want to know the very most? What about dinosaurs? Now, not only do the 5-year-olds want to know what about the dinosaurs, but the 50-year-olds want to know what about the dinosaurs, and the 95-year-olds want to know what about the dinosaurs. Why? What does this have to do with God? What does it have to do with Christianity? What does it have to do with the Bible? What does it have to do ultimately with anything of importance in your life? Well, the fact of the matter is, it's very closely connected to some of the most important things in our lives, and I'm going to show you why that is. I have a good friend of mine who is a gospel preacher at the present, and there's a reason that he is a gospel preacher now. Because he successfully answered for himself the question of the dinosaurs. Let me tell you what I mean by that. He was 12 years old. I think he was in 6th grade, if I remember his details exactly correctly. He was at a small rural school in Middle Tennessee. And he went to school one day, and the teacher was going to talk to them about dinosaurs. And the teacher gave the standard dinosaur spiel about 220 million years ago. The first dinosaur supposedly evolved, and then they evolved over multiplied millions of years. And about 65 million years ago, they all died out because a 6-mile-wide asteroid slammed into the Yucatan Peninsula and caused that mass extinction. That's what was told. And he was so excited. It was the first he had ever heard about dinosaurs. And so he came home to his mom, who was a faithful Christian who had grown up in the Lord's church. And he said, "Mom, guess what? I just learned all about dinosaurs. Can you tell me about them?" What happens if your 12-year-old comes home and is thrilled about a new subject that he learned or she learned at school and says, "Hey, I learned all about this Tyrannosaurus rex. They told me that it had a 5.5-foot-long skull with 60 razor-sharp serrated steak knife-like teeth, and they say it could have bitten off a single chunk of meat that weighed 500 pounds in one bite. It was 20 feet tall at its hips. Mom, can you tell me about that?" Well, this mother said, "Well, there never were any dinosaurs. They were made up. Evolutionists, people who don't believe in the Bible, have been teaching about these creatures that never really did exist, and you don't need to ask about dinosaurs, you don't need to know anything about them because they're not real." Now, what's that going to do to an inquisitive 12-year-old? when he goes on a field trip to a museum and he sees the pictures of the people actually literally pulling the bones, the fossils, out of the ground, and sees every single stage of that fossil recovery. And in his mind, he's hearing his mom say that dinosaurs never existed, and there is an entire cliff wall that is filled with over 1,600 dinosaur fossils that could not have been manipulated or artificially placed there. So what does he do? Well, he struggles. He wonders why in the world his mom would say that dinosaurs never existed when it looks like there's plenty of good evidence that they did. And maybe his mom doesn't know as much as he thought she did now. And if she doesn't have an answer for this dinosaur question, then who will? And there's what we call cognitive dissonance. The idea that, hey, I think my mom is right, but hey, I think this is right too. And so what do I do with that? Do you know that historically, the generation above mine, my mom's generation, she is 65 or so now, that generation, the standard line on dinosaurs was they never existed, they are made up by evolutionists, and you don't need to know anything about them. That was the standard line. Why would they do that? Why was that the approach? Well, I'm going to show you why that was the approach, and you can understand it. It's incorrect, it's wrong-headed, but you can understand exactly why that was taught the way that it was. This is a Magic School Bus book. It's just a page from a Magic School Bus. You know Magic School Bus. It's a public broadcasting. Basically, you pay a certain amount of taxes. The government says, we're going to take those tax dollars and we're going to teach your children what we think they need to know with the money that you've given us. And so this is taxpayer-funded teaching to your kids, Magic School Bus. And as you look at this, you know, you've seen all kinds of movies, seen all kinds of videos and magazines and books, etc., that talk about dinosaurs. And I think you understand the standard dinosaur line in teaching. As you're looking at this, you see right there in the middle that this young man is reading the BC Boy comic, okay, talking about the year BC. And this guy says, well, this story's make-believe because there were no dinosaurs in the time of cave people. Now let that sink in just a minute. Okay, he's saying this story is make-believe because humans weren't running around with dinosaurs. What does he mean by that? Well, what he means is, packed into that statement is that humans and dinosaurs are separated by millions of years. And why are they separated by millions of years? Because according to the evolutionary scenario, about 4.8 billion years ago, there was, well, they've changed it multiple times, but for years it was there was a warm chemical soup on the surface of the earth that got struck by lightning that caused the first simple organisms to form, single-celled organisms, and then they evolved over multiplied millions of years into humans. And along those lines, about 220 million years ago, dinosaurs first started to evolve. They died out 65 million years ago, and according to this scenario, humans didn't come on the scene until, in one shape, form, or fashion, 3 to 5 million years ago. So humans and dinosaurs, in the standard evolutionary idea, are separated by 60 million years. And so what this person is saying in the Magic School Bus writing is, hey, humans and dinosaurs never lived together. They didn't live with cavemen, and they never existed together at the same time. And as you then look at Florey's report up here, no people ever saw a dinosaur. When early humans appeared on Earth, dinosaurs had been dead for millions of years. People found out about them from their fossils. Well, what does she mean when early humans appeared? Well, she's saying when early humans evolved from lower primates, then dinosaurs had been dead for 60 million years. Now, you go to the standard mother in the Lord's church and say, hey, when did dinosaurs die out? How did they die out? How much are they separated from humans? What about this 65 million year scenario? What about the evolution that talks about? Has she studied it much? Not really. In fact, I dare say most of us, the most that most of us have looked into it is on the History Channel. We saw a special on dinosaurs. Or we happened to pick up a book that we're reading our kids on dinosaurs, something along those lines. Now you can understand what's going on there. My mom was teaching a class to ladies. There were about 13 ladies in this particular class right in Middle Tennessee. This is a congregation of about 100. These 13 ladies were there. She was talking to them about dinosaurs, and they all said, well, we've just taught our kids that they didn't exist. And my mom said, well, where did you get that? She said, well, the preacher that was here before us taught us that that was the case. So here's why that's been the case. Because most of us haven't known what to do with 65 million years. And so we've just said, hey, we don't know. We think the Bible's right. We know the Bible's right, but we don't know how it's right. And so this dinosaur stuff, we don't know. So what do you do with it? That's what we're going to deal with today. We're going to ask the simple question, how do dinosaurs fit in the framework of creation? Maybe even simpler put, how do dinosaurs fit into the Bible? Do they fit into the Bible? Well, I'm going to tell you up front, I think they do, and not only do I think they fit into the Bible, but I think the real information, when you take all of the facts, as Paul Harvey used to say, when you find out the rest of the story, then you start to realize that dinosaurs are not a problem for a person who believes in creation. In fact, what you're actually going to find out is dinosaurs do pose a problem to somebody, but it's not the Bible-believing creationist. So as we go through this, we're just going to see what the evolutionary community thinks about this dinosaur question. Now, this is a statement from a book written by Philip Kitcher. He wrote a book called Abusing Science, The Case Against Creationism. Stephen Jay Gould, who at the time he was stating this, was a very well-known evolutionist. And he said that this is a brilliant book. And Dr. Kitcher said that if you could find solid evidence to put humans and dinosaurs together, for them to coexist, then you would shake the foundations of evolutionary theory. Now, that is as exciting as it gets here, folks. So the PowerPoint gets only more boring from here. And so if this does not get you excited about what's going to happen in this lesson, then that's it. Then that's all I've got. That's the best I can do. But notice what Dr. Kitcher is saying. He says, okay, this isn't just a peripheral question. He says, as a group of evolutionists, we have put a massive amount of energy into teaching that dinosaurs and humans did not live at the same time. And if you could show that they did, what does he say you'd be doing? It's not what I'm saying you'd be doing. What does Dr. Kitcher say you'd be doing in Abusing Science? You would be shaking the foundation of evolution. And so notice that they agree that this is a central issue to evolution. That if you could just show humans and dinosaurs lived at the same time, then you would be shaking the foundations of evolutionary theory. Because, of course, he says dinosaurs and hominids, that's their word for basically early humans evolving from lower primates, that they were separated by millions of years. And so as we go into this, we'll just ask the simple question, what's the Bible say about dinosaurs? Good question. I'll just give you just a minute, if you've got your Bibles, to turn in the section that mentions the word dinosaur. And just the first person that get to it, raise your hand and I'll call on you and I'll let you read that. Hold on just a second. That mentions the word dinosaur. Now you know the problem there, of course. Okay, well, that must mean that God didn't create them because they're not mentioned in the Bible. Okay, just turn in your Bible to the word, to the verse that mentions kangaroos. Armadillos? Koala bears? You see, we would never say, oh, well, I mean, if the Bible doesn't mention kangaroos by name, then God must not have had anything directly to do with kangaroos. That's not how that works. Does the Bible mention dinosaurs? Yes. Absolutely, positively, in one way, and I would suggest, yes, in a more direct way as well. Let me tell you why the word dinosaur is not in your Bible. It's real simple. Dinosaur is an English word that was invented in 1841, 1842 by a man named Sir Richard Owen. Robert Owen, I believe his name. He was an animal anatomist who studied these fossils that started coming to light in 1822, the first one that they found, a man by the name of Dr. Gideon Mantell, his wife in Sussex, England, had found a tooth that looked just like an iguana tooth, but it was about 20 times bigger. And so they named whatever creature it was the Iguanodon, orthodontist, that word don meaning tooth, the iguana tooth, except it was 20 times bigger than any iguana anybody had ever seen. Now that was in 1822. By 1841, so many of these fossils had been uncovered and discovered that they came up with a new English word in 1841 to describe these creatures. Dinosaur, which means fearfully great or terribly great or really, really big, lizard. Okay, now, what language primarily was your Old Testament written in? Hebrew, with a little bit of Aramaic in there. What language was your New Testament written in? Greek. So if the animal dinosaur is mentioned in either your Old or New Testament, what will it not be called? It won't be called a dinosaur because the word wasn't invented until 1800 years after the last book of the New Testament was completed. And so if we're going to go to the Bible and say, hey, the Bible's got to tell us about dinosaurs, then we need to ask the question, what would it call them if it does discuss them? And I can say it won't call them dinosaurs because the word dinosaur is an English word that's invented 1800 years after the finished product of the New Testament. Now, we don't have to have a specific mention of the creatures for the Bible to discuss them. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, as you're looking at several general statements that the Bible makes. Exodus chapter 20, verses 11, for in 6 days the Lord made the heavens, the earth, the sea, and all that is in them. Now, you probably know the scenario of creation. Day one, God makes light. Day two, firmament. Day three, flowers, grass, and trees. Day four, sun, moon, and stars. Day five, birds and fish. Day six, animals and humans, resting on the seventh day of creation. Now, what does this verse say about when God made all of the plants, all of the animals, all of the birds, all of the fish? When did he do that? In 6 days. God made the heavens, the earth, the sea, and all that is in them. Did God make kangaroos in the first 6 days of creation? Well, it doesn't say he did. Well, yes, it does indirectly, doesn't it? Now, let me show you what an implication is. You understand implication, but I'll give you a little. Implication is when you can know something without it being explicitly stated in the text. Give you a statement from the book of Revelation. When it talks about heaven, it says that the gate will not be shut by day, and there is no night there. So what's the implication? It's always open. Does the text say it's always open? Well, not explicitly. It doesn't say the gate will always be open. It says the gate is never shut by day and there's no night. So it's implied that it's never, ever shut. When the Bible says that all things that were made in the heaven, the earth, and seas were created in 6 days, what would that include? Kangaroos? Giant three-toed sloths? Woolly mammoths? Saber-toothed tigers? Attaboy. Dinosaurs? Absolutely. So you don't have to have a direct statement to know that God created dinosaurs in 6 days of creation. Now, somebody's going to stop right there and they're going to say, well, hold on just a second, Kyle. Those days could have been, they could have been millions of years. I mean, it could have been that God created a dinosaur on day six and that day was extended long period of eons and eons of time. Well, we're going to get into that more in depth in our third lesson this afternoon. But what I'm going to say right now is, in this context, Exodus chapter 20, if you were to look in the context, what you would find out is it's a discussion of the Ten Commandments. This is talking about the Sabbath. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. Why do you remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy? For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens, the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and he stopped creating on the seventh day. Therefore, you work for 6 days, and you stop working for one day. Now, why in the world did God include this discussion in the Sabbath? How long were the Israelites supposed to work? Six what? What kind of days? 6 periods, 24-hour days. How long were they supposed to stop working? I mean, you can see some of those guys thinking, well, you know, if they were millions of years, I think I'll stop working for one long extended period of millions of years. Well, of course, that doesn't work. They were supposed to work for 6 days, 24-hour periods, and they were supposed to rest for one day, one 24-hour period, because God says that's how long it took him to create everything that's in the universe. And so the idea that, hey, these days were extended periods of billions and millions of years, well, it just doesn't really go with the text. And what I'm going to show you is, not only does it not go with the text, but you don't need that. What you can find as you look at all of the information about dinosaurs and subsequently all the other information is that that millions of years time frame doesn't actually correspond to what we know to be actual scientific fact. So, as we go through, the first question would just simply be, hey, when does the Bible say that God created all land living creatures on day six? Now, here's why people who have understood creation and people who understand what the evolutionary scenario about millions of years and dinosaurs, here's why there's been a challenge there, because on day six, you remember, God creates Adam. And then he brings all of the animals to Adam to name, doesn't he? I was talking to a little kid who was in my session and came up afterward and said, you mean God asked Adam to name all of the animals? I said, yeah, named them all. He said, you mean every dog? Like he named this one Spot and this one Fluffy? And I said, no, he didn't name every single dog. He named the dog kind. And he named the cows the cow kind, or whatever his word, we don't know what language he spoke, but something like bovine or canine or something along those lines. He didn't name every single one of the animals. He named the kinds of animals. Now, you'll remember why God was doing that for Adam. God paraded all of the animals in front of Adam so that Adam would recognize that there was not an animal that was a suitable helper for him. And then after Adam saw that, hey, there's nobody here that can help me do what I'm challenged to do by my creator, then God puts Adam to sleep and takes from him a rib and creates a woman, Isha, out of the man and brings and says, oh, you know all those animals you saw, none of them fit. What about this one? What about this totally different creature that's made in God's image just like you? Will this creation be able to help you in the work that I've commissioned you to do? Yes. Now, why do we think, okay, God paraded cows in front of Adam, but not dinosaurs? God paraded dog kind in front of Adam, but not dinosaurs. Well, just because every movie, every book, every show, every TV special on this has always told us that humans and dinosaurs were separated by millions of years, but that's not what the Bible teaches. And what I'm going to show you is that's not what the scientific fact bears out. God created Adam on day six. It was a literal 24-hour day, and he created dinosaurs on day six. And from the very beginning of creation, dinosaurs and humans have lived together. Now, I'm suggesting that to you, and I'm going to bring forth more factual evidence for that. But as you're thinking about that, you're saying, okay, well, hold on just a second, Kyle. You're talking to Bible believers here, and obviously, if we were to say to someone who does not believe in the Bible, hey, dinosaurs and humans live together, and we said, well, how do you know that? And we then said, well, because the Bible says it. Well, you could see that they would challenge that, wouldn't you? And so they would ask for something else. Could you show us some other evidence that would prove dinosaurs and humans lived at the same time? Well, as you continue to go through this, you start looking at maybe another section of the Bible where God comes to talk to Job. And you'll remember in this section, God has been talking to Job about a bunch of different real live animals, the wild ox, the wild donkey, the eagle, etc. And then he comes to this section about this huge creature that he calls, look now at the behemoth which I made along with you. Now, you probably know the difference between a translation and a transliteration. A translation is when there is a word in one language and it doesn't sound anything similar to the word in another language, but you know what animal it is. So in English, the word dog, we know what a dog is. Now in Spanish, what's the word for dog? Perro. You're supposed to be able to roll your R's. I can't do it real well. P-E-R-R-O. Does it sound anything like dog? Doesn't sound a thing like it, but is it the same animal? Yeah, so translation. Translation is when, okay, I've got dog in English, I know what that is in Spanish, so I translate it perro. Now, what happens when you come to a word that you don't know what the creature is? You transliterate the word. And here's what transliteration means. You make the word in English sound as close as you can to the word in Hebrew. Okay, so in Hebrew, guess what the word behemoth looks like? Well, it looks a little different because it's spelled from what left to right, and it has very different figures, but what's the first sound in Hebrew? Buh. What's the next sound in Hebrew? Huh. What's the next sound? Behemoth. Same sounds. You would pronounce the Hebrew word almost exactly like you pronounce the English word, and here's what the translators are saying. We don't know what this animal is. We know what the word sounds like, so we'll transliterate it for you and let you figure it out. Oh, thank you very much. So we've got this behemoth, and God says, look now at the behemoth which I made along with you. And so the translators of the 1901 American Standard, which I like the 1901 American Standard. It's getting a little outdated in so far as some of the way it uses some words, but I like the translation. It sticks to the text well. But now a translator's note over here says that this behemoth is supposed to be either an elephant or a hippopotamus. Okay, well, let's apply what the description of the behemoth is to the elephant and hippopotamus. Let's see what happens. He eats grass like an ox. His strength's in his stomach, his hips. His power's in his stomach muscles. He moves his tail like a cedar. Okay, so you've got this huge creature that God presents to Job as evidence of God's power. And he says, he's so massive, he's got these humongous muscles and hips, and he moves his tail like a cedar. His power is in his stomach. Well, what is this creature? It's a behemoth, but that doesn't really help us that much because we don't have a word in English that corresponds to that. And so what is it? Do you know every time that you look into the Bible and you see the word cedar, it means something humongous, something very, very large. He shall grow up like a cedar. Indeed, Assyria was a cedar of high stature, whose height was like the height of the cedars, also one of the highest branches of the high cedars. What's the point of saying something's like a cedar? It's huge. It's massive. It's big. Okay, so whatever this is, it's got a tail that it swings like a cedar. Okay, now, the American Standard translators, not in the original text, but the translators' notes, have said, okay, it must have been a hippopotamus or an elephant. All right, well, let's see. This is a picture of an oriental cedar. If you look closely, those are grown men standing at the base of this cedar, a massively large tree. When the Bible wants to talk about anything being high, tall, or big, it uses the word like a cedar. And so then we go to the hippo or the elephant. Is that like a cedar? Now, honestly, if you were wanting to describe something large on the elephant, maybe his leg is like the trunk of a tree. Maybe his trunk even would be something that you might describe as something, wouldn't describe it like a cedar, but something big. What's the one part of the elephant anatomy that you would never describe as like a cedar? You would never describe his tail like a cedar. Well, maybe the hippo does better. I mean, honestly, not to be crude, but the hippo's tail is designed for it to literally spread refuse in the water for fertilization processes. It is not any type of large appendage. Well, is there a creature that would match the description of the behemoth? Yeah, there's a creature that would match it. This creature's tail is bigger than three hippopotamuses combined. Now, why wouldn't you say that the behemoth description matches a dinosaur better than any other creature we've got? Why did they say an elephant or a hippo? Elephant's the biggest land-living animal you got that's alive at the time in 1901. If there were a bigger living, land-living animal in 1901, do you think the translators would have said, well, it's probably this or that? They just use elephant or hippo because that's the biggest ones you got. But if we know in the past there was a creature that literally did swing its tail like a massive cedar tree, why would you not say the behemoth is most likely that creature? Well, because you've always been taught that no human being's ever seen a live dinosaur, and you've always been taught that humans and dinosaurs are separated by millions of years. Now, notice what God said to Job. Look now at the behemoth. There are no extra words in your Bible. That I made along with you. Why do you think God said, Job, I want you to look at this behemoth, that I made along with you? I made him at the same time I made you. You can see him. Now, people suggest to us that Job is the oldest book in the Old Testament, would have been maybe subsequently right after the flood, even before Moses wrote the books of Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, which were 1450 B.C. or so. So they suggest that Job could have been in about 2000, 2400 B.C. Now, as you're looking at that, okay, well, what does history have to say about dinosaurs? Here's what I mean. Secular history. If humans and dinosaurs actually did live together, I mean, think about that. If they really did, don't you think there'd be some stories about them? Don't you think somebody would be describing some type of interactions between humans and dinosaurs? Sure they would. Now, what would be the challenge there with nailing them down to dinosaurs? Well, they'd be called something else because the word wasn't invented until 1841 in English. And so what would they have been called? If you look back at history and ask a simple question, do we find a description of any creature interacting with humans that sounds like a dinosaur? Well, let's see what the answer to that would be. Are there ancient stories about really, really big reptiles? Sure there are. In fact, they weren't called dinosaurs, they were called dragons. The term dinosaur wasn't coined until 1842. Ancients used the word dragon from the Greek drakon to refer to any large serpent or reptile, whether real or mythological, aquatic, aerial, or terrestrial. Have some dragon legends been embellished over time? Little Johnny explains to us he catches 100 fish and they all weigh 100 pounds. Sure. Sure, some have been embellished. But as you start to look at the ubiquity of dragon legend, now, I always like the word ubiquitous because I think I learned it in like sixth grade and I thought, that's the greatest sounding word ever, ubiquitous. I mean, you throw that word around and people really think you're smart. You don't have to be, all you just got to do is memorize one word. But ubiquitous means it's spread out all over the place. And so if I were to say in Texas, big popped up four-wheel drive trucks are ubiquitous. Well, that just means everywhere I go, I see them. The special Texas edition, it puts it about 18 inches higher than your standard truck in the rest of the contiguous United States of America. But anyway, ubiquitous just means it's all over the place. It's everywhere. Okay, well, what's ubiquitous? Now, notice, I'm going to quote for you some atheists and some evolutionists who are talking about this idea of dragons. Okay? And they say the implacable mutual hostility between man and dragon, it's not a Western anomaly. It's a worldwide phenomenon. He said this happens all over the world. Dragons and humans have been at each other's throats all over the world. And you're going to see not only all over the world, but for thousands of years. Dragons are found in the myths and legends of cultures all over the world. People all over the world have believed in dragons. Now, let me explain to you what I mean by that. You will find a 1600 AD natural history writing, and they'll explain creatures to you. They'll say a dog is this kind of creature, it's got fur, it's got a deer is this kind of creature, it's got this, a dragon is this kind of creature, it's got this. They'll put it right in the list of animals that you know still exist and you know once existed, dog, deer, dragon, right in the same list. And then when they describe the dragon to you, they will say it's a large reptile and it has lots of times a pointy head. We'll see how they describe it. This was from Animal Planet 2005. There's one creature remembered in the legends of almost every human culture that's ever existed. Now, I want you to let that sink in. The idea is presented to us that no human being's ever seen a live dinosaur, ever. And yet, Animal Planet, that has a very, very evolutionarily biased leaning, says, yeah, but there's this one creature. It's called a dragon, and it's depicted with remarkable similarity by Chinese, Aztecs, even the Inuit. Inuits. Where are the Inuits? I mean, you're talking Eskimos in frozen tundras. The Inuits who live in the frozen land where no reptiles are found, even they have stories of this animal, the dragon. Cultures from different continents, people who had no contact with one another, yet all of them have stories describing the same. Now, notice why the same mythical animal. He said, look, you can go to the Inuits, you can go to the Aztecs, you can go to the Chinese, you can go to the North Americans. They all talk about these animals that are huge reptiles. They couldn't have copied each other, and they've been doing it for thousands of years. But make sure you understand it's mythical. Interesting. Continue with me. The antiquity of dragon legends, the dragon slaying theme was an important motif in the Sumerian mythology in the 3rd millennium BC, 2900 BC and down. This is the animal about which mankind has throughout history been most compelled. Dragon legends have been with humanity since the dawn of recorded history. Okay, folks, we know they wouldn't have called them dinosaurs because the word wasn't invented until 1841, 42. You've got a word, dragon, that is used to describe any really, really large reptile-like creature. And that dragon is described by virtually every culture in human history over the last 6,000 years with similarity, and you couldn't have copied the stories from each other. So what are you dealing with? Well, continue with me. I think you'll find this very interesting. Common characteristics: scaly, hard, elongated bodies, long serpentine necks, enormous tails, stout legs, horned, knobby, crested heads, fearsome teeth, claws, spikes, with or without bat-like wings, with two or four legs. What is that right there? That's a good question, isn't it? You'd like to call it a... I don't know what you want to call it. Call it whichever you want. Call it a dragon, because why? It looks just like one. Spiky, knobby head, large reptilian body, or call it a dinosaur, because that's exactly what it is. This is called Dracorex. It is one of the newer dinosaurs that they have found that they call Dracorex because they said when we pulled it out, it's actually Dracorex Hogwartsia, meaning the dragon king from Hogwarts, because if you find a dinosaur, you get to do stuff like that. And here's the placard on it. When we saw this creature's head, we weren't sure what kind of dinosaur it was. Its spiky horns, bumps, and long muzzle looked more like a dragon. Okay, so here's what you got. You got stories all across the history of the world for the last 6,000 years. They describe a similar humongous creature, reptilian, spikes, long tail, big tail, virtually everything that we know about dinosaurs. We dig one of these dinosaurs up, and it looks just like a dragon, and so we name it King Dragon Lizard. Because if these creatures did exist and humans saw them, they would have talked about them, and there are multiple stories about creatures called dragons that you wouldn't have used the word dinosaur because it wasn't invented until 1842. So what do you got? You've got textual evidence that humans and dinosaurs lived at the same time. Now, you don't just have textual evidence that humans and dinosaurs lived. It's a new type of dinosaur that looks like a dragon. Interesting. Okay, continue with me. I'm going to go to this idea, the idea that no human being's ever seen a live dinosaur. Here's what I have presented to you thus far. You've got the biblical evidence that says God created dinosaurs and humans on day six. You've got the textual evidence that says from virtually every single culture across human history, there's been a creature that matches our description of dinosaurs that everybody called a dragon. Now, let's go to the physical evidence for dinosaurs and humans living at the same time. I was presenting this information several years. I guess I've just had started. It was probably like the second time I had talked to kids about dinosaurs. I had a group of about 150 first through third graders at the Heritage University on the floor there in the big auditorium at Heritage, and I felt like I had done such a good job talking about humans and dinosaurs living at the same time and the Bible presenting the information and all of. And so after I felt like I had communicated to these young, formative youths, I was just going to ask them one question to, you know, basically validate myself and how well I had done. And so I said, knowing the answer that they would give, I said, did humans and dinosaurs live at the same time? Expecting all of them to say yes, because I had just poured 35 minutes of my life and heart into the discussion. And in unison, they said, I said, what? I said, I just spent 35 minutes giving you guys all the evidence, showing you all the stuff. I said, why in the world would you say that they didn't? And one little kid raised his hand, and he said, because you put up a slide that said no human being's ever seen a live dinosaur. I said, that's it. Now, this slide is from National Geographic 1993, and they put in the very first line of their writing, "No human beings ever seen a live dinosaur." Where do you put the most important information that you want to get across to the reader? First line and the last line. Well, I've got another slide or two we won't get to today where a standard dinosaur book, at the very beginning it says, "No human beings ever seen a live dinosaur." At the very end it says, "No human beings ever seen a live dinosaur." The thrust of dinosaur teaching is primarily to convince your kid that no human beings ever seen a live dinosaur. Now, I said, from that time on, I would never show this slide without a very large red wrong on the slide. This idea that no human being has ever seen a live dinosaur, that is, what is it? Wrong. That's wrong. That is not the idea I'm trying to get across. The idea that I'm going to get across is that human beings have seen live dinosaurs. In fact, I'm about to present some physical evidence to you that validates the biblical statement and the historical textual statements that we've already shown. As we continue, this is the Natural Bridges National Monument. Several years ago, Eric Lyons, my co-worker, and I went out to the second largest natural bridge in the United States of America. I think it might be in the world. It's called the Kachina Natural Bridge. This is it. We got up about 4:30 that morning, got out. You had to hike about 45 minutes down. We went to the Kachina Natural Bridge for a very specific purpose, because several evolutionists had been studying the Anasazi Indian rock art on the Kachina Natural Bridge. And they were writing about this one particular carving that is on the side of the bridge. Now, it's about 10 feet up. It's about as tall as that first wall seen there. And as you look up, you're not getting in this picture the real good relief from what is there on the wall. I'm going to darken it for you so you can see it a little bit better. This is a kind of a human figurine type. You can see a little bit. But now here is the carving that is on the side of the Kachina Natural Bridge that we went to see. And now we went to see this because the evolutionists themselves had been writing about it, discussing it. And so we go see the picture. And now I've shown this picture to, I don't know, tens of thousands of kids. And I've asked them, what does that look like? And what's the answer? A horse. I mean, almost every one of them say, no, they don't say it looks like a horse. They don't say it looks like an elephant. They don't say it looks like a hippopotamus. What do they say that looks like? Well, I mean, it looks like a dinosaur. And there's a reason they say it looks like a dinosaur. Why? Because, I mean, it does. That's exactly what it looks like. And you don't have to take my word for it. You can listen to a man by the name of Fran Barnes. Fran Barnes is an evolutionist. He is not a proponent of creation. He would not think that the Bible is the inspired word of God at all. He would think that you are silly to suggest that humans and dinosaurs lived at the same time. He would suggest they're separated by 65 million years. But here's what he writes. Fran Barnes, in writing about this particular carving, he says there's a petroglyph in the Natural Bridges National Monument that bears a... Excuse me. Pardon me. Sorry. Was that startling to you? Sorry? Okay, bears a startling resemblance. Now, what do we mean by the word startling? For all of you who are asleep and you woke up and spilled something, I'm sorry about that. My bad. Now, here's what you mean by startling. You find something or hear something or come in contact with something that you're not expecting, right? Now, probably the best illustration that I know of startling, that's a good one. But another one was when I was a kid, my dad, I have two brothers and a dad. My mom says she raised four boys at her house. And he would do stuff like this. He came home with a 6-foot-long black snake that he got in the feed room over at the cow barn. And he thought we needed a new pet. And so he brings it home in this feed sack and throws it to us and says, "Here, guys, here's your new pet." So we thought, oh, that's exciting. So we pull out a 6-foot-long black snake. We're playing with it and everything. We think, oh, we're going to keep this for a little while. And so we get an old aquarium, doesn't have any water in it. We put the 6-foot-long black snake in the aquarium in like it was almost like a screened-in porch connection to our house there in East Tennessee. It was still kind of a part of the house, but it was kind of outside because I think my mom had said, we're not having that snake in the house. And we somehow got away with, well, what about on the screened-in porch area? And so we put it there. We wake up the next morning. We had put a rock on the top of the lid there that we thought it would hold it down, and we get up the next morning, 6-foot-long black snake is gone. Well, we look around for it and we try to find it. You know how kids are. They don't look real diligently for much of anything. And so we look for probably like 12 minutes and we don't see it. We say, oh, it must have gotten out. It's not in the room. We can't find it. There's a little place under the door that it could have crawled out. So we think, it must have crawled out. About 3 days later, my mom goes into her closet to get a pair of shoes. But that's not funny. Y'all go in your closet all the time. I mean, what's the problem with that, huh? Didn't you went to your closet this morning. Why is this fun? Of course, she went to her closet. She was going to get a pair of shoes, and we heard a blood-curdling scream. She was startled. Yes, she was startled. Why was she startled? Because she went looking for shoes. She found a 6-foot-long black snake. Now, why in the world would this be startling to an evolutionist? All your life, you've been told that no human being's ever seen a live dinosaur. You know this can't be fake. You've been studying the rock art of this particular Indian group for years. In fact, you're an expert on it. It matches all the other rock art, and it looks just like a dinosaur. And so you'd like to say it doesn't look like a dinosaur, but you can't, because every third grader knows it is, or it looks just like one. And so Fran Barnes says there's a startling resemblance for this creature to a dinosaur. Now, if you understand the truth that God created humans and dinosaurs on the same day and they've existed together from the dawn of human history, and you've seen the textual evidence about dragons and dinosaurs and you understand that that puts humans and dinosaurs together, but then what would you really be looking for along the lines of some of these things? Well, you'd be looking for a physical connection like rock art. Is this startling to somebody who believes the idea of creation? No. Is it startling to somebody who's been told all their life that no human being's ever seen a live dinosaur and humans and dinosaurs are separated by 65 million years? Yes. And so see, what I'd like to suggest is that the idea of dinosaurs is not a problem for the creationist. Oh, on the contrary, the idea of dinosaurs is more a problem for the person who clings to that evolutionary time frame of 65 million years or so. This is a series of temples that we know was built in 1187 AD by a man named Javarman VII. You know, I don't know what you get your mom for Mother's Day. Used to, it was just some candy and a card. Javarman VII decided he wanted to build his mom a series of temples in Cambodia. And so we know for a fact that he built them in 1187. And these temples have on them, oh, it looks like an Indiana Jones movie, really. But as you're going, there's carvings all over the side. Most of these carvings are of the deities of Javarman VII and his mom, etc. But as you start looking at some of them, there's one particular series of carvings that's in the corner of one of the rooms that, oh, I think it goes up about 10 or 12 feet. And there are things carved on it like this. Now, the problem with wanting to say that this carving is a fake is that, do you see the little black stuff in here? It's called patina. It builds up over hundreds of years and you can't fake it. And what's on this carving right here is the same as on this carving, and it's the same as all over the temple. You know it was done in 1187. You couldn't fake it. As you're looking at that particular carving, you know, what does that look like? Well, it looks like a dinosaur of some type. In fact, many times, what you got? What kind of dinosaur is that? Stegosaurus. Thank you very much. Now, let me ask you this question, guys. How many of you could have said that that looks like a stegosaurus? Now, he could, obviously, and there might be a few others of us that could. But you know what happens, generally speaking, if I start throwing up pictures of dinosaurs on the screen? Boy, my 10, 11, 9, 8-year-olds can say, that's a stegosaurus, that's a spinosaurus, that's a tyrannosaurus rex, that's an ankylosaurus, that's a giganotosaurus, that's a, you name it. And then if I were to have a contest and say, okay, guys, anybody under 20, don't answer. Anybody over 20 gets to answer. What is this? That looks like a sleeposaurus right there. I don't know. Now, let me ask you this question. If all the people generally speaking in my audiences don't, from 20 ages and up, 20 years old and up, don't know the names of the dinosaurs, and the kids from 19 down do, where are they getting that information? Or maybe a better question was, where are they not getting the information? You know, so the importance to us there is, if they're picking up the names of the dinosaurs from other places, they're also being made to see and hear the other stuff in those books that we need to make sure we can combat. And so as you look at this, yeah, it looks just like not only just a dinosaur, but it looks like a stegosaur, a stegosaurus. As you're looking at this, what you're going to have to do if you're an atheist or an evolutionist who doesn't believe that dinosaurs and humans lived at the same time, what you're going to have to do is say, no, that's not a stegosaurus. It's something else. And so seriously, one of the strongest challengers that we have had on presenting this as information for dinosaurs and humans living at the same time, he said, no, that is not a dinosaur. He said, that is a pig with bushes behind it. Now, you're going to have to say something because you can't say it's fake. It's not fake. It matches all the other carvings and everything. You can't say it's fake. Now, if you look at this, you think they must have had some really good landscaping back in 1187 for those bushes to be perfectly... You see the problem. What I'm saying is that you have to stretch really far to try to say, well, okay, no, maybe it's a chameleon of some sort. Since when does a pig have a tail that's that large compared to the rest of its body, etc.? Okay, what's the easiest, simplest answer to this? This guy in 1187 carved a creature that looked very much like a dinosaur. In fact, not only just dinosaurs in general, but specifically a stegosaurus. Do you have a problem with that? I don't. Why? Because humans and dinosaurs were created on the same day, and they have been coexisting for the entirety of human history. It's not a problem there. But it is a problem for somebody who doesn't believe that humans and dinosaurs lived at the same time. Here's what I find very interesting. I'm not going to let you look at that. I'm going to explain it to you real quick, but some of you probably already know this. There was a lady by the name of Mary Schweitzer who found a Tyrannosaurus rex femur. She didn't find it herself, but she was studying on it. And she discovered something in the femur that she repeated her test 5 times, and she did not want to report her findings. Now, why do you think she was hesitant to report the findings? Well, here's what happened. Tyrannosaurus rex femur. Tyrannosaurus rexes are supposed to have died out 65 at least million years ago. This one supposedly was 70 million years old. And it broke open. The femur did. The large leg bone of the Tyrannosaurus rex broke open. She looks inside of it and she thinks, well, that can't be right. That's not a fossilized area. And now, you understand probably some about fossilization. Fossilization is where everything in whatever has been fossilized has been removed and rock has been replacing that. And so all of it is actually just rock. I have a fossilized coprolite that I take around to school sometimes. Anybody know what a coprolite is? To explain to us, if you don't mind, what a coprolite is. Yes, it's dinosaur poop. Now, I will hold that fossilized dinosaur poop, and I'll explain to the kids that this is dinosaur poop and it's been fossilized, and then I will hand it to one of the kids. What do you think they feel at first when they see me handing? I mean, it's in a shape of rock. It's nice a little bit. You hand it to them, and at first they're like, oh, I don't think I'm. And then I explain, look, it's not. It's all rock now. And all the stuff in it has been replaced by rock. It's not really poop. It's really a rock in the shape of dinosaur poop, okay? Now, when you're holding a coprolite, you're not holding dinosaur poop. You're holding rock in the shape of it. When you're holding a Tyrannosaurus rex femur, you're not supposed to be holding a femur. You're supposed to be holding rock in the shape of a femur, right? Okay, but then they break it open. Now, this particular femur is supposed to be 70 million years old, and Mary Schweitzer starts doing research on it and realizes, hold on just a second, this thing hadn't been fossilized. Not only has it not been completely fossilized, but it looks like there is still some soft tissue in this Tyrannosaurus rex femur, and so she starts seeing if it's stretchy. So she takes tweezers, pulls it apart, and it's so stretchy that it snaps back together. Now, why do you think she would be scared to report her findings of soft tissue in a 70-million-year-old dinosaur femur? She really thought she was going to lose her job. Because if this dinosaur femur actually has soft tissue in it, that means it can't be 70 million years old. It can only be a few hundred, maybe a few thousand at the most. So she reports it. And then other people think, well, if it's in that, wonder if it's in other. So they have multiple discoveries of soft tissue in dinosaur fossils that aren't completely fossilized. Now, if you have always said that this bone is 70 million years old and you break it open and you find soft tissue that is stretchy with leftover red blood cells in it, still intact, what should you say? Ah, our dating is wrong. These cannot be 70 million years old. Can't be. What did they say? Huh? Didn't know soft tissue could last 70 million years. Must be the iron in the blood. That's what's making it last 70 million years. That's what they said with a straight face. And they said that was a pig with bushes behind it with a straight face. Do you see the problem there? Look, is it a problem for a creationist who understands the biblical time frame to dig up a dinosaur fossil and that to have soft tissue in it? It's not a problem whatsoever. Would a creationist say, well, we better not report these findings because we might overturn? No. You say, hey, we've got a Tyrannosaurus rex femur. It's got soft tissue in it. Matches perfectly what we understand the story of creation and human history to be. No problem there. But it is a real problem for people who suggest that 65 million years ago, dinosaurs died out, and that's the last time anybody ever saw one. A real problem. Okay, so you're following with me. I think we're doing some really good teaching. I mean, we've been going at it for now about 15 minutes, and so we're really going to have to get down to the question of, okay, so what happened to them? You know, as you're starting to look at this, where'd they go? You know, that's the real challenge, because if someone's out of the room, you can say anything you want to about them, and they're not there to defend themselves, right? Well, dinosaurs are out of the room. Yeah, we in modern times have found out about dinosaurs from their fossils because dinosaurs are now extinct. And so lots of times people use that extinction and they say, okay, well, if dinosaurs and humans live together, just show me one. You know, that's good. Show me a dodo bird. They're extinct, aren't they? You know why dodo birds are extinct, don't you? Well, they're about the size of turkeys. They tasted like chicken and they weren't afraid of people. You got a bunch of sailors, they're starving, they get off their boat, they go to an island where there are dodo birds, they go to a flock of dodo birds, the dodo birds don't run away, they whack one over the head and they take it back to the ship and they eat it and they think, wow, that's great. I think I'll try that again tomorrow night. And their buddies had a bite and they think, well, I want one too. And so they go and they subsequently kill all the dodo birds because dodo birds are now extinct, aren't they? Three-toed sloths are now extinct, saber-toothed tigers are now extinct, woolly mammoths are now extinct, homing pigeons are now extinct. Do you know that they suggest to us that 90%, 98% of all the animals that once lived are now extinct? Now let that soak in. I don't know if that's exactly accurate, but that's the suggestion that 98% of all the animals that once lived are now extinct. If that were the case and you had 100 animals at creation and you drew a circle around 100 of them, how many of those animals would be left right now? Two. And incidentally, what animals often are some of the first to go extinct? The big ones. Why do the big ones go extinct? Because their habitat is destroyed most readily, or the massive amounts of food that they need to stay alive, those leave. And also, dinosaurs have been kind of defined out of extinction. And here's what I mean by that. Fearfully great, really big lizard. Are there still some really big reptiles around? Oh, yeah. Saltwater crocodile is, what, 32 feet long sometimes and can weigh over 2,000 pounds. It's a pretty big one. You know, the average size of a dinosaur was only the size of a rhinoceros, and some of them went down all the way to the size of a chicken or smaller. And so for us to say that all dinosaurs are gone, all fearfully great, terribly great lizards are gone, but we still got a 10-foot-long Komodo dragon that can run as fast as a horse can gallop for short distances, that's got 50 different bacteria in its mouth, that when it bites something, that thing normally dies of infection in 3 days, and it can eat 80% of its own body weight in 15 minutes. Now you think about that. This Komodo dragon goes into the meal weighing 100 pounds. He walks out of the meal after 15 minutes weighing 180. I thought I saw some of those college boys that happened to them tonight out at the soup and sandwich. I mean, we still got some really big lizards? Sure. We just haven't defined them as dinosaurs. And so, as you look at this, where did the dinosaurs go? Well, what we're told is a massive meteorite slammed into the Yucatan Peninsula and caused this humongous die-off 65 million years ago. Here's the challenge with that. Were sharks supposed to be alive 65 million years ago? Yeah. Are they still around? Yeah. Were crocodiles supposed to be alive 65 million years ago? Yeah. Are they still alive? Yep. You can go to some of the fish. Coelacanth fish supposed to be alive 65 million years ago? Yeah. Are they still alive? Yeah. What about turtles? Are they still alive? Yes. Okay, so really what you're saying is this huge die-off killed this group of creatures that happens to be extinct, but the ones that aren't extinct, they just happen to live. Oh, that's convenient. But is there maybe a better solution to this, a better explanation? Oh, I think so. Number one, I don't think you ever had any type of millions of years. But number two, you've got another challenge to this huge meteorite die-off. And that is, why did it kill a bunch of these dinosaurs, but sharks and turtles and crocodiles and those kind of things are still around? And how would it have fossilized all those dinosaurs? And here's what I mean by that. You go to Utah, the Dinosaur National Monument. If you were to look right through this glass here, you would see a wall that's not a wall. It's built onto the cliff, and that cliff houses some 1,600 different dinosaur fossils. And so as you walk in, here's a wall, it's plaster and everything. Over here, it's built onto the cliff. That makes the other side of this building. And you start looking at it, and you see lots of these rib bones and backbones and neck bones. And then you see this little placard. And it explains to you pictorially what they suggest was happening here. And then it explains to you verbally, after a seasonal flood, this scene of 145 million years ago, based on clues, carcasses brought downstream by fast-moving muddy water. Now, that 145 million years, I think, is erroneous. But notice what they say caused this massive fossil graveyard. Now, there's a reason you've got to have a good cause for a fossil graveyard. If you were to have tracked when out west the trains would pull up and there would be herds of thousands and thousands of buffalo, and for entertainment purposes, the people on the train just shot thousands of them at a time and left them laying on the prairie surface there, did they fossilize? No, they didn't fossilize. The possum that you ran over last week, did it fossilize? It didn't fossilize. Why? Because fossilization is a very rare process. You have to have something bury very quickly so that bugs can't get to it, so that oxygen can't get to it, and it has to be buried in a sediment that will basically seal it tight. That's why you've got to have an explanation for a massive fossilization. Okay, after a, notice this, seasonal flood. Do you know if you were to look up all the fossil graveyards of dinosaurs, massive die-off fossil graveyards, do you know what virtually every single one of them says? A regional flood, a local flood, a flash flood, a seasonal flood, a flood, 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 flood. Do you know of a flood that could have caused hundreds of thousands or millions of dinosaurs to be killed all at once and then to be buried very quickly and to fossilize? Sure you do. In fact, the flood of Noah provides the best explanation as to how most of the dinosaurs died and were fossilized in huge, massive dinosaur graveyards. Now, if you've been keeping up, though, you're thinking, yeah, but the Anasazi Indians lived in, what, 1,000 A.D.? So, in 1187, Javarman VII carved something that looks just like a stegosaurus. So, some of them had to live after the flood. So, that means that, but I had, what? I mean, been on the ark, and you can see how that would go. Shem comes in with a sling on his arm, and he says, Ham, your turn to feed the Tyrannosaurus Rex today. I did it yesterday. I'm done with that. You know, my daughter came up. She said, why were Noah and his family never hungry on the ark? Because they always had ham. Now, she made that one up, so I don't know. Anyway, you going to put them on the ark? Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, some of these creatures were 116 feet long, weighed 120 tons. Massive creatures. How are you going to put them on the ark? How are you going to feed them? How are you going to take care of them? How are you going to house them? Yeah, that's a real good question. The other day I was seeing a news reel about a big, this is an alligator. It was 20 feet long and weighed 2,000 pounds. 20 feet, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, yeah, about that long. Tail tip to nose right there is about this long. They found it in the Philippines. They were going to use it as they're going to put it in a zoo, and it was going to be, they're going to have people come see it in this particular Philippines village. 2,000 pounds was 20 feet long. You know how big an alligator that's 2,000 pounds and 20 feet long starts? You ever seen an alligator? Hatch out of an egg, they're about 6 to 8 inches long. You know the largest dinosaur egg we've ever found is 24 inches? I mean, you're talking 24 inches, that gives you a dinosaur that would have grown to be 116 feet long and to weigh 120 tons. It starts in a 2-foot egg. Do you read a verse in the Bible that says, Noah, I'm going to bring to you the two largest stegosauruses that I can find. No, I'm going to bring the two biggest seismosauruses that I can. I'm going to bring to you the two largest titanosauruses that. No. What would be your solution to this? Well, just put you some young dinosaurs on the ark. Young dinosaurs that might have been freshly hatched, newly hatched, that would only been 2, 3, 4 feet long. The Bible never says you had to have the biggest pair of creatures to go on that ark. And they get on the ark after that flood. The atmosphere of the world is very different. In fact, so different that potentially even 98% of all the creatures that ever lived on the earth that were created or lived subsequently after the flood, many of them went extinct like so many other creatures have. You know, here's what I find to be so ironic. Evolutionists have used dinosaurs for years to say that the Bible's not right, or to cast doubt on creation, to say that humans evolved and dinosaurs were separated by 65 million years. But if Behemoth is a dinosaur, what was God using Behemoth to do? To show Job how awesome and powerful God is. Look now at the Behemoth which I made along with you. And he explains all the proportions and the hugeness and the power and the might of this Behemoth. And he says, now if that creature you can't control, and I made him, what does that say about me? You see, isn't it time we take dinosaurs back and use them for what they were designed to be used to do, and that's to bring glory to God. And we take those interesting, curious, amazing creatures, and we sit our children on our laps, and we say, hey, let me tell you about a seismosaurus. It was huge. It had a tail that swung like a cedar. In fact, its tail was longer than 3 hippopotamuses put together, and God made this creature. Hey, let me tell you about the Quetzalcoatlus. It was the largest flying creature ever, had a wingspan the size of an airplane, and it was a huge flying reptile, and God made it. And that God is awesome. Hey, let me tell you about a Tyrannosaurus Rex. Isn't it amazing that there's a creature that had a 5.5-foot long skull that could take one single bite of meat that weighed 500 pounds in one bite? God made that. And that's how awesome and powerful our God is. And so it's time we take those dinosaurs back and use them for what they were designed to be used for in the first place. And that's to bring glory to God. And the fact of the matter is, that's what you're designed to do, isn't it? You're here, I'm here, to bring glory to God. I think by your presence, you are doing that this day. I am thrilled with the attendance, and I greatly appreciate you being here. It looks like we went a little over time, but that's okay. The dinosaur, I actually have about 6 hours of dinosaur material, and you guys got about a little bit of it, but you didn't get the whole picture. There's a couple books on the back of the tables there. There's a Dinosaurs Unleashed. That is our book for sixth graders on this subject. Like I said, most all of this is free in article form with pictures and stuff on our website. We've got videos on our website on this that you can watch, videos similar to this, although more extensive. And we also have an adult book called Dinosaur Delusion, where we go through and document all the scholarly writing and the science journals and things that validate what we've been saying today. And so if you want to avail yourselves of any of those materials, feel free to do that. We're going to take about a 10-minute break, and we're going to come back here at 2:30, and we're going to pick up on creation and evolution. We're going to be talking about what the textbooks, are presenting as evidence for evolution and what the facts of the matter are along those lines. So, 10-minute break, and we'll be back in about 10. You're free to go do what you want to for 10 minutes.